Welcome the public hearing on the truth in taxation. Public hearing for the 2012 tax levy will now come to order. Mrs. Stecker, would you please call the roll?
Mr. Bondrack?
Here.
Mr.
Chair?
Here.
Here. On November 12, 2012, the Board of Education of Glen Ellyn School District 41 adopted a resolution of levy intent for the 2012 tax levy. Notice of the December 10, 2012 Truth in Taxation hearing was advertised on November 29, 2012 in the Gatehouse Media Suburban Newspapers, doing business as Suburban Life Publications, a newspaper of general circulation in DuPage County covering the communities of Glen Ellyn, Wheaton, Carroll Stream, and Lombard, and Glendale Heights. And the tentative levy was placed on display. The board will take action on the 2012 tax levy during its regularly scheduled meeting, which will follow this hearing. To date, we have not received any comments regarding the 2012 tentative tax levy. Are there any members of the public who wish to provide testimony at this time on the tax levy? Okay, hearing none, may I have a motion to adjourn the public hearing?
Motion.
Second?
Second.
Roll call, please.
Yes.
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 Yes. Thank you. Well, we'll go ahead and start the regular meeting. Thanks, everybody, for coming. Please feel free to come on in and sit down.
No,
leave it open.
Can't.
No, it's a
we
public
cannot,
meeting. We have
cannot
to leave
close
it open.
It. You can't close it.
Yeah, it's a public meeting. We need to leave it open. But thank you for asking. Tell them to come in. All right. The regular meeting of the Board of Education will now come to order. Mr. Ellis, will you lead us in the pledge?
The pledge of allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Board member Dan Smith is not able to attend the meeting in person due to an employment-related obligation. In accordance with the District 41 policy, Mr. Smith notified the superintendent's office that he would not be physically present for the board meeting, but would like to participate in the meeting by phone. May I have a motion to approve Mr. Smith's participation by phone in tonight's meeting?
Motion.
Second.
Roll call, please.
Yes.
Yes.
Mr. Black?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Nelson?
Yes.
Welcome,
Dan. Thank you.
Mrs. Stecker, please call the roll.
Mr. Kenwood?
Mr.
Bondrack?
Here.
Mr. Smith?
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Howard?
Here. Mr. Black?
Here.
Mr. Ellis?
Here.
Here. Thank you very much. Are there any members of the public present who wish to address the board at this time? Public participation?
It's just
public participation. Participation. Yeah. Please stand. And you can give the green sheet to Mrs. Stecker over there. Thank you.
My name is Bruce Curry. I talked last time and was just going to talk about Think Tank and how I don't think the implementation would be way too fast. I think the teachers wouldn't be ready. They'd have to all move their room, and as a teacher's had to move his room four times in the last 5 years, it's a big effort. But deciding how your children would get looked at from an educational perspective, in last Tuesday's meeting, they were looking at eight categories of people across the map. So this is how your people would be skilled. It looked somewhat like this, with most of the children being slightly above average in the second and third third grade cohort. And You would then have, instead of having eight separate sections, you would have three, as I understood it. And your child would be chosen from the very top, the lower middle top, and then the top, and then, or the middle. And then these kids down here would be in three sections here. My kid lands right here, both my kids land right here in the middle, maybe a little above the middle, I want to think. And who decides whether they go low with the kids, or who decides if they go up with the, you know, the geniuses here in the district? It's a big issue for me. I'm a teacher, and I have to teach all the kids that come to me in my class. I teach bilingual, so a lot of the kids are way below level, reading level, in English. They need time. Some are above. And as a teacher, it's my job to modify my instruction to meet their needs when their needs arrive. It's a lot of work, but it's truly what I love doing. And I think I'm good at it. And I know the teachers here in this district are excellent teachers. I want to say they're more experienced than I am. And I think they're doing a great job. And I think sometimes we should just get out of their way and let them do the great job that they do. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Curry. Anybody else? Again, we'll have an opportunity for public participation at the end of the meeting also. Okay, thank you. All right, presentations.
Oh, sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry. I turned my head.
My name is Benjamin. Is this on? Or do I need it on?
Yes.
Whatever works for
you. My name is Benjamin Cairns, and I'm actually stepping up this evening to say some positive things in regards to everything that's going on in regards to the think tank and the changes to the curriculum. I've attended several of these meetings. I, for one, am, you know, always enjoy a great debate. And this isn't a debate, what I've seen in this community. I think that this discussion has been so one-sided. I think that there are literally people in this community who are scared to stand up and say positive things, and I think that goes for parents and teachers alike. We moved to Glen Ellyn because it's a great community. We moved to Glen Ellyn because it's got wonderful school systems. We did not move to Glen Ellyn to live in a community that is full of vitriol and bullying, which is going on. It just isn't acceptable. There are people that feel positive about this experience and what's going on with these changes. I, for one, and with full disclosure, my wife was part of the parents' advisory portion of the think tank. With or without her involvement, I see great things going on here. I see the teachers and the parents and the administration who's been involved with the think tank stepping forward, taking initiative, not sitting on their laurels. Where we have a good school, but we have an opportunity to have a better school and an opportunity to have a great school. And everything that I see that's going on here, I think, is terrific. And I know that there have been some of the key questions that have come down in regards to how much time are your kids going to spend out of class. I think there's been a lot of miscommunication. Kids aren't going from class to class anymore than what they were initially. The only exception is if your kid is an overachiever and they may have to leave one class to go be challenged in a better class. I think that's a fair sacrifice. Some of the other things that I wanted to comment on was the curriculum. And there's been a lot of concerns in the fact that teachers aren't going to be ready to teach this curriculum. When I go ahead and I take a look at the curriculum, and as I've attended these meetings, Dr. Reebok has mentioned, the curriculum next year is going to be the same. It's going to have more of a focus, and it's going to give an opportunity for the teacher to be a specialist in their math and science and the STEM programs, as well as literacy, as well as social studies. But the curriculum itself isn't changing. And if our teachers aren't prepared and ready to teach that curriculum that they've been teaching and go further into depth and the teaching ability with the focus of these groups, we've got a bigger problem here. And then the next opportunity is a shared grades. And the last meeting that I went to, which was last Tuesday, Dr. Reebok showed the math scores, which Mr. Curry showed. You know, I saw the reasoning for these grades to be shared like this, second and third, fourth and fifth. when you take a look at the spectrum of the learning curve, the outliers in all of these grades are the ones who are going to benefit the most. And from what I see, I think those are the people that are most concerned about these changes. But there were more than one teacher that testified in that outing that their biggest concern as a teacher is a lot of times they're challenged with having 8 segments of learning abilities in a class. You can't teach math. You can't teach English. You can't teach literacy to 8 separate groups effectively in the amount of time. Now, I think the big concern had been that there's going to be a grade here when you're going to have the best students and the middle students and the low students. I feel extremely comfortable, as it was explained in that meeting, that these classes will be heterogeneous. These classes aren't going to be broken up by smart, middle, and low. These are classes where these kids, as I said, on the opposite ends of the curve, the outliers, are going to have an opportunity that they're going to feel that they're part of a community with other kids that have similar challenges, either on the top end or the bottom end. As I said before, I go back to the administration and I say bravo. The teachers who are involved. I think that what's going on here is a great thing, and I hope other people would speak out in regards to that. And I'm proud to have my 3 kids in this school, and I think it's been a great school, but I think it can be even better.
Thank you, Mr. Cairns.
Thank you.
Okay. Anything else? Again, we have another opportunity at the end of the meeting. Yes.
Thank you for the opportunity to share again. As a parent of a first grader and a third grader, we're very excited and we are very glad to be here in this community. We have been here for 3 years, and the reason why we came is because we wanted a community where we felt safe and also when we could enjoy and knowing that we were preparing our students for a better opportunity. I'm an educator myself, and I agree that we need to always strive to improve our educational system. I agree with that. And I think that we should always look for new ways to help our students get the best education so they have, so they're better prepared for the world that they're coming in. 21st century skills, that's what we heard last time we met here on the Board of Education. We're talking about not also that, but we're talking about the new Common Core standards. And when we think about literacy through the content, when I hear about having a literacy block and a math block and a science block, I think that is not necessarily embodying what the Common Core standards are trying to show us. We really want to help our students learn literacy to exploring science, exploring math. That's one of the things that I'm really concerned about. The other piece is that when we have had concerns about teachers in our schools, we have addressed that and we have brought it forward. And as far as we have not seen that proactiveness in remediating some of the teachers that we feel like they could improve. With that in mind, when I think about this huge change and all the professional development that needs to happen in order to prepare teachers to teach our students, I truly believe that we don't have enough time to do step one, year one, in the year 2013-14. That is my concern. I understand that we need to start moving forward, but the problem is, last time when we met, I heard about the things that we could do, but I didn't really hear any teacher saying, I am going to be a second grade, third grade teacher, and this is what I'm going to do. I didn't hear that at all. So that definitely makes me very concerned. I'm not sure if teachers are really, really grasping this concept and running with it. If teachers are forced into that, I'm sure they will comply, and I know they will try their best to do that. But if we don't have the teacher buy-in, which we haven't heard that in our school, our concern is that teachers will not be completely prepared and giving the 100% they could in order to teach. That is one of our biggest concerns. And I understand that if we want to expand grades, my biggest concern with that is that when we finish first grade, we have our students getting the hang of literacy. The idea for that is that if students are not being able to make meaning out of the text, they will not be able to explore new content, new learning. So when we think about students finishing in first grade, being able to read the code, read with fluency and comprehend, if they're not ready for that, when we throw them into a second grade with third graders as well, that's going to be a huge gap. Second grade, we really focus on math, the skills of reading. Third grade, we really read to learn. And if our students are not there, there's going to be a big gap between second and third grade. That's another of my concerns. Again, if you want to do that, I would just ask you to be very, very thoughtful on how you want to do that. Make sure that you have tried processes and you show us how this has been happened with the pilot. What are the results? What are the scores that show us that there has been an improvement? Other than that, that makes us very uncomfortable when we're talking about our children, putting them in, trusting them into your classrooms. We want to see that evidence before we can jump in and follow. At this point, we feel like we don't have the trust. We haven't developed that. And the other piece is that when we heard this presentation, no decisions have been made, yet we have a timeline for next year. That's pretty scary, and that's very hard to build trust on them. So just for you to keep that in mind, please, please consider it and think through this before we move forward.
Sir, what was your name? I'm sorry, I didn't get you.
My name is David Rojas.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Rojas. All right, thank you. Anybody else? Again, there will be an opportunity at the end of the meeting to have further public participation. Come on up.
Do you have a green card to give to Mrs. Stecker?
Yeah.
Pardon?
Your green sheet.
Oh, I didn't get that.
Oh, that's right.
We'll give you one. We'll just fill it out after.
Yeah.
Okay. Hi, I'm Jennifer Rath. I'm a parent of a third grader and a first grader at Lincoln School. I'm also an elementary school teacher. I've taught for more than 20 years. I've taught the rich kids in Hinsdale, and I've taught the poor kids in Cicero and Lyons. I have a master's degree in reading, and I'm currently working as a reading specialist. I know people are adamant that have presented at the think tank that this is not tracking, but to me, it is semantics. To me, the leveling bands are a type of tracking. I have taught more than 20 years. At our last presentation over at Forest Glen, one of the second grade teachers said this would solve a lot of her grouping problems, that she had 8 reading groups. In all my years of teaching, I've really never seen anybody with 8 reading groups. That would be 2 or 3 kids in a group. And I have studied under Fontes and Pinnell and read the book, and that's what we use in our district. And I believe that Fontes and Pinnell even say 4 groups is the max to make it effective. I would suggest that if you had a problem with such a wide band, to go to strategy grouping or to one-on-one conferencing, which is kind of what's coming down the pipe with CAFE reading. I don't know. I'm very uncomfortable with this. I'm uncomfortable with it being rushed. I'm uncomfortable with the fact that Downers Grove and Hinsdale are moving away from tracking and any sort of ability grouping. They set the bar high, and they have all the kids move up to it. I'm not for this model. I am for aspects of this model, so labs, more deeper teacher training in differentiation, in integration, and in problem-based learning, more technology, but the multi-age grouping and the leveling, I can't digest. Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you, Mrs. Rath. Anybody else? Sure. And I want to remind people as we have further participation that if you're hearing something that you're agreeing with or saying, we'd love to have that in writing to the board, but in the effort of time and wanting to make sure that we hear the presentation too, if you have something new to share, please do that. If you want to reinforce a comment that was made, please use our emails we've been collecting, and I've literally been printing out everything so that I can hang on to it and take a look at it. Okay? Thank you.
Hi, I'm Sherry Kemp. I also have a first and third grader at Lincoln, and I actually agree with a lot of what Jen just said, and I just would like to add to that I've heard from many of my friends at St. Michael's downtown Wheaton that they just tried this a few years ago. The parents weren't really buying into it there. They tried it for 1 year. It failed. They had to take it back, and they kept some aspects, and they changed some aspects of it, but they found that what the parents' concerns were, which are many of the same concerns that we're having, were actually true, and they had to reevaluate everything. So I, too, agree with a lot of people here. I really feel like it should be piloted first. So that's all I have to say. I'll keep
Great.
It short.
Thank okay. you. Thanks very much. Anybody else? All right. Thank you very much. Thanks for your comments. Again, we'll have time at the end of the meeting again. All right. No scheduled presentations. We have discussion tonight, and we'll start with the think tank report.
We did not intend to re-present to the board the presentation that was made at the last meeting, since you were there and members of the community did the participation portion, and you did not have a chance to discuss or ask questions or further clarify. We brought the presentation for you this evening in case there were pieces of it you wanted to go back and reference. But this is really your opportunity to ask questions as you would normally do after a presentation. And I would reiterate that the discussion on the agenda this evening is just that. It is not our normal format of moving from discussion to action, which would mean this would come before you in January as action. It will not come before you in January as action. This is simply your first opportunity to ask questions, to have any discussion that you may wish to have. When Think Tank has had an opportunity to meet, probably following winter break, and digest all of the feedback and make any other comments or thoughts to share with you, then we would bring those back to you sometime in January. But at this point, what we've shared with you is the current thinking of Think Tank, and so we look to have just your feedback on that.
Okay, I know we've got more Think Tank members kind of scattered throughout here, and
do you want to ask Think Tank members to stand?
Well, you can at least stand, but for them to be able to feel free to answer questions as well.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Helpful.
Absolutely.
Any questions, comments? Anybody want to start?
Go ahead. You can start. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Nope. Mine are more comments. I had a couple of questions, but go ahead, John.
You guys want me to go first?
Sure.
All right. Get it out of the way. This could take a while.
Oh, dear.
I guess there's... I definitely have a lot of questions, as you guys know. Couple of comments, I guess. I've been getting a lot of emails, and for me, there's a couple of general points that I think are being made. The first, obviously, is the way the community has stood up in terms of their concern for what we're doing, and their really praise in terms of the education that the kids are getting at District 41, which to me has made that worthwhile sitting here for this amount of time, because you don't always know that. So I think that it's been great to read these emails and understand that people do value the education that their kids are getting. I feel we're still getting from parents the notion of wanting their kids to be challenged more than they are today. That's another theme that I'm picking up from the emails. The teachers, they're doing a great job. That's been my experience with my kids. I've had three kids. I still have one in the system, but we've been blessed with all our teachers and the work that they've done. As a board, we've received positive feedback and negative feedback on the whole program. Obviously, the plan is still being developed. It was our goal to share the plan with the communities as we were moving along. I think that was the right thing to do, but it certainly, when it's not fully completed and when we're still trying to figure it out, obviously it makes it hard from a communication perspective. And I'm still feeling that there are members in the community that feel that this was forced upon the administration or forced upon the community, and that it's a done deal. And if you've attended these meetings, I don't know how anybody can think that. There are seven of us here that have been elected. We're all individuals. We're not, we don't go out together. Or we don't know each other. We came together. We can't even agree on whether the Hadley Courtyard should be put in place or the parking lot. And there's a lot of things we can't even get agreement on. So for what it's worth, I can assure you that we are listening. We want to listen. We want you guys to be a part of this process. And that hopefully when this process plays out, the perception will change. Having said that, I think one of the biggest things that I've heard from the community is, you know, don't fix something that's not broke. And I kind of think back to our journey here, from our perspective, at least from mine, and from what I think a lot of the board members feel. You know, there's not a headline that we don't see in education that says things are broken. Our education system needs to be changed. We are continuously ranked low in science and math, in writing. I do feel that the STEM labs, for me, are a key element of this program and should be a part of whatever solution we go forward with. I feel writing as well is something that that we need to focus in on. We have less hours in our school day than many other countries. That's another trend and problem to me that I think needs to be addressed. There's lots of discussion around 21st century learning. It's being funded at the state level, the federal level. It's not because things are great and things aren't broken. It's because we need to prepare our kids for what companies essentially are asking for, which are kids that are more creative, problem solvers, and you don't get that in ISAT test scores or Common Core standards or whatever standards are. You just don't get that. Preparing for high school today, in my opinion, is significantly different than it was even 5 years ago. Today in high school, you're either in a regular class, an honors class, or an AP class. And make no mistake, that starts in ninth grade, and colleges are looking for it. It's a part of their evaluation criteria for how you get accepted into a college and how they differentiate you. And we need to prepare our kids, those that are ready and those that will, to take an AP course. And in my opinion, in science and technology, that's not happening in this district. And it's not a fault of teachers or the administration, but some of these standards that we follow. And there are more demands for that in the future. So I do believe that we have to prepare our kids for that. Getting into college is much more competitive than it was. So we have to prepare. We need to incorporate engineering and technology. You know, just another point about reinforcing the STEM concept and integrating engineering and science into it. We've used differentiation in the school district. I've talked to several teachers. When you have maybe not eight groups, but even 3 to 5 groups, which it seems like, at least when I talk to them, there's an average of 3, 4, or 5 kids or different groups in a class. I'm not a teacher, I'm not a professional, but it just seems a very hard thing to do to be able to separate those groups. And they're being separated. I mean, you know what group you're in and what class. That's happening today. I don't know if that's, to me, that seems like it's harder for the teacher to do. I think what's, for me, to try to solve this problem, and again, I don't know if this is the way we're doing it is the right way to solve the problem, but I do think that when people say things aren't broken, they are for us to compete in a global economy in education. I believe that, and I think there's a lot of data to support that. Our approach today is a cookie-cutter method of you come into kindergarten, if you know how to read, or if you don't know how to read, your standards say you learn the alphabet. So for the kids that don't know how to read, they learn the alphabet. For the kids that know how to read, they learn the alphabet. Teachers will try to break them up appropriately, but I just think that that's more difficult. I don't equate the kids that know how to read and equate the kids that don't know how to read as smart, dumb, high, low. They just are at a certain place right now, and there's a good chance some of the kids that don't know how to read, when they come in, maybe by third or fourth grade, are some of the best readers because they found a new passion, something maybe they haven't done, and they gravitate to it and they go for it, and all of a sudden they're the best readers. And you know, we need to be able to move them up accordingly. I've also heard from the community that we're doing well in our ISAT scores. Well, you guys know my opinion on that. The ISAT doesn't really mean much. That's the data we get after the kids are already 2 months into their next grade, and to me, that's not a measure of success. So I do feel that some things are broken here and that we need to address them. Again, I don't know if this is the right approach to doing that, but certainly I do believe that it's broken and we do need to address it. So I guess for me, we as a board asked the administration to do this, to look and explore and understand how we can approach the way we educate kids differently, better, and prepare them for the world. And this is what's been come up with. We're in a process, and we're going to evaluate it. I think beyond the community's concern around things not being broke, I think one of the other big things we've heard is transition and the concern about transition. And I'd like to clear that up, which is now I get to my question part. So if I look at today's world and my experience with my kids, they will transition anywhere from 3 to 5 times today per day. In other words, they transition to gym, they transition to lunch, they transition to art, they transition to music. If they're gifted, they transition to either gifted English or gifted math. If they need a pull-out, they transition there. The way I look at this, and I'm asking, I'm not saying, I just want to make sure it's clear to me, I see they're transitioning now instead of 3 to 5 times, 4 to 5 times, because we are forcing a transition from English to STEM. Is that the way I should be interpreting that or not interpreting
that? That is the way. And that's how we perceived it, because some of them also transition for targeted learning time.
Okay, so it's not, some of the emails we received is, transition all day, every class. The way I'm seeing it is there's this big block of literacy, which includes social studies, and you're together with that teacher, and then there's a forced transition to the STEM, where you're with that teacher. And then art, I'm assuming you would transition the way you do today, or music you would today. I think one of the differences someone pointed out to me is today my art and my music, it's the same class that transitioned to that art or to that music class because they're all in the same class. Is that correct? That's the way it happens today. So, again, I'm asking in the future, if I'm a parent that has a kid that's taking an instrument, like piano, and then I have a parent who doesn't, to me, there would seem to be some value that if I were in this second grade group of kids, right, the 4 second graders or whatever, and we're going to our art class or our music class, if I learned if I learned the notes, A, B, C, D, E, F, G, I might go to this class, which might be a different group of kids, for music because I already know how to play an instrument and I'm going to be taught differently there versus the kids that are just learning. Is that a transition point or is it the same as it is today?
They'll transition with their class to art and music.
So they would go with the class. They would not be with a different set of kids.
Their literacy group, they go to PE because that's when the PE pull-out would come, and then art and music is coming after that. Math, science, STEM time, they would transition with those kids.
Okay. The other thing I think I heard, you guys are more than welcome to ask questions. I get tired.
Well, tell us when you're done.
I guess the other transition point I've seen in the emails is that people fear that there'll be more transition time lost for the kids because of the model of going back and forth. The way I interpret it, again, I'm asking, is it seems like transition time might go down because you're actually you're in a room with a teacher, let's say, for literacy, and you're not, 45 minutes of social studies, put the book away, 45 minutes of this, put the book away, and transition there. You're actually giving the teacher the ability to spend this time together in literacy or math, doing projects, and not having to transition every 45 minutes and moving around. Is that the way I should interpret it or not?
Yeah, definitely. We want it to be more seamless, and for teachers to make decisions. You kind of alluded to an example that in science, we're going to be doing this experiment, and I need an hour. Currently, their day is very chunked, and it's fairly limited because of trying to coordinate common DLC time. You know, everybody goes to a special. Where this gives teachers the opportunity to make those decisions to say, I'm going to take an hour and devote it to science, and so I might spend a little bit less time on math. Or I need an hour and 15, 20 minutes to math to really do what I need to do.
So today, in science, for example, did I bore her already?
No, we just need the door open.
Kind of starts and ends with a search time.
Right, so in science today, if I have a lesson that takes an hour or a lesson that takes 20 minutes, I have 40 minutes that I'm building.
Like 30.
30. Okay. All right. And then,
can I add something?
Yeah.
You were asking about the transition time.
Right.
The transition time when you're changing from like the literacy block to the STEM block is also centered around lunchtime, so that's actually attached right to the lunchtime. They come back with their coats away and go into that other class. So it's not like they have to transition.
So that's a transition they have today.
Right.
Just they go to lunch and then they go back to a class.
Hang up their coat and go to class.
Okay. And we can accommodate that given the different lunch schedules. In other words, sometimes some kids eat at 9 in the morning and some kids eat at 3 in the morning.
No, actually, I was on the subcommittee of that, and we've got like 6 or 7 different possible schedules to accommodate that.
I only know this because when they forget their lunch, I have to bring it to them.
Yeah, bring it in.
All right. Is the statement correct? Today, a kid will transition 3 to 5 times a day, depending on their needs. Gifted, pullouts, lunch, all right? And rear now, sounds like we're just creating similarly 3 to 5 times because that lunch one is still a part of that, or is it really 4, or do we know? Or
the one thing, though, that we didn't really talk about is they have an opportunity to go into this STEAM lab, which is all centered, all the math and the STEAM labs are centered, are going to be located in the same part of the building. So if I'm taking a class in the STEAM lab and we're doing an hour lesson on it and some form of building, constructing something, we need an hour, that may be right down the hall. So rather than having that science within my classroom, I would move into the lab to actually have that science. That's currently we have science within the classroom.
So basically, and I'm sorry to belabor this, but basically, outside of what we're doing today, there's just this, the social-emotional part of transitioning is not necessarily the logistics and all the stuff involved with it. It's really, I have a teacher in the morning, and I have a teacher in the afternoon, and they could be different.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's really the big transition part. And I guess this is maybe more of a personal statement, but, me, I feel that a teacher's ability to social emotionally connect with a child based on their subject content can also be a very positive thing. Unfortunately, we have transition to gyms, which is a different teacher that talked about health and wellness and the ability to have fun, gain confidence. We have teachers in art that transition and socially teach creativity, and I could see that passion going into a literacy block or a STEM block. Okay. That covers my questions on transitions. Does anybody have any questions on transitions, or should I move to my next topic?
You may be efficient in your comments.
I don't know.
We all get a chance.
So the other one is multi-age grouping. That's another thing. Okay. So the way I'm interpreting this is, I'm just going to throw something out and tell me if I'm right or wrong. The way I'm interpreting this is, if I'm in the second, third grade grouping, this family, whatever we're calling it, 85% of the kids that are in second grade, conceptually, in the second grade, will be with second graders, and 85% of the kids that are in third grade will be with third graders, but there is the possibility for the 85% of some of these second grade kids that are in the second grade grade getting a third grade curriculum because they're ready for that. Is that a true statement or a false statement?
How about if you just describe it?
I'm trying to get to two points. I'm trying to, the way I interpret the emails I'm getting is everybody is implying that my second grader will be with third graders potentially all day long or all over the place. The way I interpreted the presentation was the majority, and I'm throwing out a number, you guys tell me if it's high, low, whatever, but the majority, 85% of my second graders will be with second graders, 85% of my third graders will be with third graders, but there will be situations where maybe there's a second grader that we think is above the initial third grade curriculum and maybe needs to be with third graders in math, for example, or literacy. But the way I'm interpreting the presentation is that a small percentage of those kids exist, maybe 15-20%, and the majority would still be with official designated second graders, but maybe taking a third grade curriculum.
And let's talk about it by subject area, because that's where the difference comes in.
Okay.
If you think of just the literacy social studies block, that's more of a true multi-age. Half our second and half our third grade in the same classroom.
So I would assume that 50% of second graders are with 50% of third graders in literacy. Okay.
Is that every section? So in the 2-3 grouping, 4-5 grouping, every section will have a 50-50 balance in this in your mind?
I couldn't guarantee it. You may have one higher.
Closer to 50 than 85.
But that's different than my number of 85, 15, right?
And that's the literacy block.
Okay.
Can I just mention that? I think that you have to kind of take the second and third grade level out of it, because it's more of where they're at developmentally in the subject area that they're being taught. So it's hard to say that. I understand your question is really about the age group, but it's really what we're focusing on is how we can reach them where they need to be met, academically and socially.
But heterogeneous groups, a mixture. So it's not going to be all the low third graders with high second graders, that sort of a thing.
It's not, Karen. Please say that again out loud, because that's something that we've heard a lot. So I want to make sure that people actually heard the comment.
Right. We're not suggesting that you take low third grade and high second grade and put them together because they're going to be more alike. We want a mixture of second and third graders. And so just as the building principals and teachers work today to create a balance within those classes, that would continue.
Okay.
Now in math, I go back to about 85% of second graders will be with second graders. Some of them may be getting third grade math and others will be getting second grade math. 85% of your third graders, and that could even be higher than 85%.
Yeah.
But the STEM part of your day will predominantly be with kids in the same grade.
Or
if not the entire
for grade. Math but not for literacy.
That's correct.
Okay. And on the math, I think that happens today. Like, I have a daughter who's in seventh grade, who's with an eighth grade class. And, you know, when that opportunity came to her, she was a little nervous. She was concerned about it, asked me some key questions. It's like, wow, she's smarter than I am. And for us, it worked out wonderfully. This young lady, Corey, took her under her wing, an eighth grader, and just did a wonderful thing. So just as an experience, that was very good for us.
Are you basing these statistics off current math score?
That little chart there, yes. And math's just going to be one indicator.
I'm sorry, Karen, can you please say that again? Because that would be another comment that we've often heard about, that it's only math. So I'm sorry, you said
the math test would only be one indicator, but that's something that we can, you know, you can look at. It's a RIT score, and you can compare. It's not grade specific or age specific, but there would be other pieces of information we'd be looking at to kind of make those decisions for kids.
Mm-hmm.
But at least preliminarily, we went to strictly with math. Again, just one data point.
Like, I mean, could it be like a rubric? I mean, often using rubrics to make decisions on grouping kids, things like
well,
that.
Literacy,
don't
just
even know. Right. Don't just even know.
At certain grade levels, you have the ISIL. Teachers, I mean, there's a lot of good anecdotal information from conferencing with kids that teachers would be able to know. In math, you can use unit assessments. We can create assessments from limited Common Core standards that would be consistently administered.
Does anyone else have any questions about multi-age?
Are you going to... do you have like two other buckets? Because you're
I've got like 10.
Oh. Well,
it's our opportunity to ask questions about it.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. But
do other board members?
Yeah, are there any other
questions
about these areas? I mean, I would simply say that that you know, as I looked through the material and you know, all the emails that have come in and calls or you know even conversation at the grocery store. There are certain themes that have come up, and John has hit on, you know, two of them in particular, the multi-age piece, and then I think it'd be helpful. I know, Mr. Curry, you brought up your pencil drawing of the band, which is difficult at best to see, but I appreciate the fact that you actually wrote all that down because it was a pretty complex board. But I think that there's a great concern among parents who have this question about this idea of tracking. And my understanding from being at the Forest Glen meeting, so this kind of ties into the multi-age thing, is that tracking is not what the think tank is recommending. But there is confusion about what that means, and I know that, Anne, you answered that question specifically, I think at least one, I know once, but maybe even two or three times at Forest Glen. So it would be helpful for me to hear the definition of that and what that is and what the think tank is recommending that we're doing that is not tracking, as you would define it.
The definition of tracking.
Right.
Well, tracking to me is where you put all your low kids together, you put all your high kids together, and you can put all kind of the middle kids together, and then that's where they stay, and they continue to kind of move along that track. Occasionally, someone might be able to kind of get bumped out of there, but what we've known and what we've learned from past experiences is that kids tend to stay in a track that they begin in. Would it help to kind of bring up the colored chart? Mm-hmm. Just because the people could kind of see.
Mike, bring up reading, the aggregate. Second and third is fine.
You're not going to be able to see, like, well, no.
Although, good effort.
Those are scores across the bottom, and all the blue lines are your second graders, and all the orange lines are red. It's orange on the piece of paper, but it does look red up there. Are third graders. And you can see, and this is just from a map score, in reading, the overlap and the similarities and like scores. Clearly you have outliers, but if you look at that little orange line at the far left and then that orange, those orange at the far right, that's a pretty wide range. So we want a heterogeneous mix. We don't want to put all those low kids. We've learned from years, and I'm a former special ed teacher, taught self-contained and resource. I know what it's like when they, you know, you put all the low kids, you get behind in the curriculum, you move at a slower pace. We can't afford to do that. We're trying to reach the rigor of the Common Core, not go backwards with that. And we know there's great things benefit from these great conversations, and they learn from each other, those kinds of things. But when you create these eight groups, because that's what you would ultimately have, there's a possibility, and eight buckets is what I've kind of referred to it as. you wouldn't want to put those kids at the very low end with the kids at that very top end. So if you kind of remove those outliers, but you're still going to have a mixture of groupings of kids in that low, average, and high area. And I hate to keep calling it low, average, and high, but that's kind of, if that's what helps kind of a
reference. But Karen, what you're saying, because this came up before us, Glenn, too, is that those are, that is where that child is at in that moment. Because I know that is some of the theme we've also seen in our emails and the questions have been about, well, how will my child then be reassessed? And the measures of academic progress, these assessments, right? It is the same exam, correct, that is then changes as the child takes the test, answers 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 questions correctly, the rigor of the test goes up, right? If they start to lose time, their responses go down, it readjusts to that. So all of our children are having the same test.
Right. But we would want to make a decision on one. This just happens to be fall math.
Right.
You'd always go back and look what's been their trend. Because if someone has an off day,
right,
it's an off day, and you wouldn't want to kind of put all your eggs in one basket and assume that. So you kind of have to look at that data picture. But it's exactly what you do now when you create class lists and what teachers know about it. So you're still going to have that mixture, but we're trying to kind of narrow that band.
Right. I just want
to targeted learning time, what you already do with your targeted learning groups.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So it's something that we really currently do in some ways.
And that usually targets a specific skill.
Right.
Right.
But I mean, they're fluid, mm-hmm. and this is something that we currently do in our schools every day with our teachers with this curriculum.
And that's really the kind of the wing time in the schedule helps replace the targeted learning time. And the reason, part of the reason, is when you look at these this kind of array of students, and you have second and third grade together. And you see that there are similarities in how they are as readers and growing in their literacy development. And you have 8 sections in which to create heterogeneous groups. You have greater ability to ensure that other readers have readers just like them. And yet within the range of a heterogeneous classroom. So it's not a readers just like me of a classroom. Mm-hmm. It's a group within a larger heterogeneous group. And those groups, depending on what is occurring, are not always going to be in that just like me group. They're often going to be a mixture. But when they get guided practice, just as they do now, they would be in groups that are just like that.
Just as we do now. I apologize for
instruction guided reading. Right.
I apologize if I sound like I'm beating a dead horse, but I feel like often a lot of the comments that we've received or questions or concerns that we receive, I feel like we maybe need to just take a step back and take a look at them, because I'm actually not seeing, I mean, obviously this is a change, but we're currently using some of these practices on a daily basis in our buildings. And so I get a little nervous, because I think either parents don't understand that this is what's already happening in our buildings, and that this is such a drastic change that they can't wrap their minds around it, and I understand it, but that these are current practices that our staff already employ to teach our students. So I know it's not exactly like this, but these are techniques and already things that we do.
But it sounds like, you know, if I were the parent in the room here, right, I think the question that we are asked and been asked in a couple emails is, so a couple things. If I look at the blue, which is my second grade, is that right?
Correct.
That's a lot, right? And that's what drives, I got to have 3 or 4 different reading groups in my classroom, differentiation, blah, blah, blah. And I think the parents would say, why can't we take that blue second grade and spread it over just the 4 second grade teachers and not get the third graders in there? And my hypothesis, just looking at this, when you look at the range of those Lighthouse ones,
it's the
RIT
score.
Okay, the RIT score. When you look at the range, it becomes a math problem where if you really want to get a heterogeneous population, you have to go for 8 sections to bring it together, because if you just took the blue in 4 sections, you would literally probably be doing more of this tracking idea than that. Again, I'm asking, it's all hypothesis based on looking on this chart that's supposed to help.
Potentially, and that's one of the things when we meet next, we're going to take a look at, because that's what we heard from parents. You know, can you do it if you don't do multi-age? Mm-hmm. And the pieces of this all work together, but we're going to take a look at it. And then if we do that, what are the implications?
So your reason for crossing grades is really that, based on this pattern, even though we associate kids with a grade, there's definitely a wide enough range of where you are and where you need to go.
And a lot of light learners. And the other misconception with this is that we would teach one grade level curriculum 1 year and then another grade level. And over 2 years, kids would experience a series of 8 different literacy modules, so that it's not repetitive, but the standards are, you've got those grade level basics, and they're broad enough that we can do that.
So to piggyback on Erica's question around tracking, I think one of the questions I've seen over and over is, how do I know my kid doesn't get pigeonholed and, down there and stays there? And hypothesis, again, asking, is it sounds like if we're doing the math score, I know one of my kids was off the charts early in reading, my other one was not, but then after a while, got the passion for reading. We would continue to use this analysis to drive where a child should go, or how does that work?
Remember, you're still going to have heterogeneous groups, and just as it is today, when teachers notice things about kids through their small group instruction, through then they take a running record, they'll move kids now, and we would clearly expect that to continue to happen. And for some of our kids, we need to accelerate that rate of
learning. I was just at a team meeting today at one of our schools, and they were at their data wall. And they were examining, every teacher at that grade level was talking about current Fontes and Pinnell reading levels. And they were focused on students who were outside of the grade level band. And where were they after, this period of time? And I don't remember how much time had passed, but those students had been reassessed using Fontes and Pinnell. And the data wall, board members or anybody who may not know, is a big wall, and it has every kid in a pocket chart with their reading level and any other particular needs they might have. And the teachers will meet in front of that wall to talk about where their learners are currently and make adjustments based on current data. And so several students who had moved levels in their Fontes and Pinnell assessment moved. And so when they moved on the data wall, they were regrouped. So that's an ongoing assessment that's occurring in our buildings to determine where students are. And while the team is looking at it from the macro of a whole grade level and how are our students doing, the individual teacher is making individual decisions. At that meeting, also, students were moved out of reading intervention because they were performing, they had made the growth necessary that they no longer needed that intervention. So, I think that's the kind of work that's being done that would continue to be done in order to ensure that no one is staying somewhere longer than than they need to be.
So in terms of the student groupings, maybe it's just me, maybe I don't understand it, but I have yet to fully grasp the reasoning behind the grade level mixing. So to keep hearing a lot of the phrase of like we do now. And so I'm just wondering if that was contemplated and decided against, or is it something that we need to take a look at as to these particular changes that we're trying to make in groupings, et cetera. Can we do that with maintaining the current grade level system that we have now? That makes sense?
I think that's what you said, that they're going to go back and look
at it. Yeah, they're re-looking at that.
The group really looked at it from the standpoint of maximizing learning for students and being able to reach all learners. And so when they looked at the numbers, the sheer numbers of students and how this lays out, that you have very similar learners between second and third grade, when we look at the fourth and fifth grade data, the actual band gets much wider because the gap is growing. So certainly one of the desires in that 2-3 is to make sure that gap gets addressed. And so it's really about looking at your sample size, which gives you a greater degree of flexibility in how you group students and ensuring that there are groups of similar students along with mentors and more challenging students to keep your growth occurring, but your sample size is larger. So from just a really practical standpoint, Sam, that's one reason in looking at the larger sample size. If the learners were so disparate in that sample, in other words, if we looked at that chart and we saw everything was blue on the left and everything was red on the right, there would be no purpose in trying to put them together as just right learners, because they wouldn't be. But in here, what you see is that there's a lot more similarity to them as learners in literacy that would...
I understand. Is that a snapshot in time?
Or that's just our fall map test.
So every year could be different.
It absolutely could.
Vastly different, right?
It could. And you'd have to adjust for every year based on that.
But to answer your earlier question, but that's what Think Tank will go back and look at.
Mm-hmm.
If we don't do the multi-edge, we'll look at just second and just third.
And can we have the same flexibility, assignment of rooms, create the STEAM environment? So as Karen said, there are no individual pieces. Much of this is all a layer of pieces together. So they'll look at that in the context of all the other layers, too.
And to pick up on that, I think what I would be interested in seeing as the think tank continues to assess is if a piece is taken off, how does that then shift or change the objectives and ultimately, you know, what you're looking to accomplish? And because that will have, you know, that certainly will have bearing on the whole.
Mm-hmm.
So I would be interested in that.
The STEAM labs themselves, do we know or can we describe what they actually would look like? Is it going to be like a science lab, or is it going to be a normal classroom? What is it going to be, and how is it actually going to be used? Is it for an hour basis, a 30-minute time block, a all-day deal?
Well, they have to be used all day because we don't have the luxury of saying this is just going to be...
Right, but is it just one class that's going to use it that day, or is it every class can use it a particular period of time every day?
It'll be a math classroom when it's not being used as a science lab. And keep in mind, next year it's, for lack of a better word, the same old science curriculum that we have. The new standards will come out in March. So those STEAM teachers next year would be studying the new Common Core standards, developing a curriculum and identifying those resources. So to know where that the look of that lab will end, we don't know a year from now. My instincts tell me you kind of are going to need a lot of space. A lot of the engineering types of activities, you know, require, because they're building things, constructing things, launching things. I mean, there's a lot of pieces to it. So, but we'll have had that experience of using this space flexibly for a year. So this is what gets at your question of would it be a half hour, things like that. Is those four STEAM teachers would come together to say, you know, this is where we're at in the unit and this is how we're going to be accessing it. So if I'm the math teacher who also has the science lab where all the old stuff is going to be stored next year, I would kind of flex out of that space and go to another math classroom, but all my materials are there because all of the rooms would be math classrooms as well. Does that help?
It helps a little. It's is it my understanding that we're going to try to build these labs this summer?
Well, we originally built some resources into our capital projects to build, maybe do construction, in other words, take down walls and create double rooms. We've since backed away from that a little bit for next year, and we've decided that each school would individually determine whether they were going to use one room, and I designated it as a steam room, or whether we would have whether they could do two rooms. And I think each building, the principals are here and they can speak to that, but each building may be a little different in terms of what they feel they can do next year, whether they will just create one single room and try to make it as a science room with where the current curriculum can be implemented with a lab environment. So we're probably not going to do the degree of construction we originally looked at when we started to basically rearrange some spaces in each of our buildings.
So the rooms are going to look like classrooms, but they're for next year anyway. They're going to be designated as...
And probably for some time. I mean, as you know more as well as anybody, that our facilities are not going to ever... Our current facilities will never offer us the opportunity to create what I would characterize as a full lab. Would need to be much larger, and but we would hope that in the next 2 years we'd at least be able to reconfigure classrooms, though shared. Ultimately, they become shared spaces to accommodate a science laboratory.
I'll tell you what I'm excited about. I'm excited about having a classroom or two in our building that where the science materials are all there and not on a stage or not above a wall stored in containers. Because when they're stored in containers, it takes a long time to take them out, and then where do you put them afterwards? So having a classroom where kids can move into and everything they need is right there in that room and easily accessible, I think that's what I'm excited about for next year, having a steam lab or having two small, one large steam lab or having two small ones. Either way, it'll be much better science implementation of our science curriculum than we're currently able to do. Mm-hmm. Knowing that the following year, you know, when we look at looking at our science curriculum after the standards are released and really being able to then align it with the engineering portion of it, integrating more technology into it, really what we're looking for, you know, 21st century kind of science curriculum.
I can't remember this, Sam, but I think we saw some pictures of or examples of some of the STEAM and STEM labs from some of the site visits you did and or some that are locally, as I recall. I mean, some really high-tech and very, very large, et cetera, and others, more to what we're talking about, which is let's use the space we have but reconfigure it so that it's implementation-based, it's application-based, the kids walk in, which is, again, another question came up in terms of how do we utilize those materials. It's a good question.
Well, what we want is for kids to understand the importance of when I go into this lab, I'm a scientist. I create, I innovate, I explore, I use inquiry, and kind of raise that level of importance of the sciences and engineering.
Mm-hmm. Other questions, Drew?
Tara, the district that this is based on, I mean, where did all these data points come from? Where was your source material in terms of the districts that you visited?
Well, the districts we visited, and I would say it's data points, each of them serve kind of a different purpose, and we've identified other districts as well. We just haven't kind of continued with the visit. For example, the reason the Champaign visit was strictly to see, they kind of have this state-of-the-art STEM lab at an elementary school. And I see a couple of people who actually were able to go on that trip. And their whole focus is about STEM. So, you know, everywhere you went, that was included. So we wanted to just see what it would look like. And actually, when you kind of think about it, if we could take your Telemation Center at Lincoln, because it was kind of like in the middle of the school, it was, you know, just they were able to do some very cool things. So It was actually our architects who had told us about that school to go see that. And so that was the purpose of going to that particular school. The one in South Carolina, we were able to see these snippets of different things that we were thinking of. They had multi-age from a Montessori perspective. Granted, we have Montessoris around here as well. They had an arts-infused school. So we saw how they're integrating the arts into their curriculum. They had an international baccalaureate school, which is a very prescriptive curriculum, but it was great to see kind of how that exists and how they implement it. They had another very, very at-risk school that was all grounded in Stephen Covey's leadership principles for kids. So it was really to just see different pieces of it. They actually had another school too, I forgot, that was all project-based learning. So we were able to see pieces of what we were looking at kind of in isolation at those various schools. And then Waukesha, probably, and there's quite a few people who were at Waukesha, was the closest to being both multi-age and they have a STEM focus. They started out being just STEM. The rest of their district has multi-age classes, and they just implemented the multi-age. So I would say we probably learned the most from them and how they did things, how they made that transition. The principal and a couple staff are actually going to come to our January Institute so that other teachers can kind of hear that experience. And Susie's put together a couple of PowerPoints on a couple of the visits so that we can get them out there so people can kind of see those different pieces. But it's not like we were able to say, okay, we found this school and they're doing exactly what we want to do and we wanted to be just like them. We tried more to what would meet our needs.
So we've gotten some emails around didn't work at Arlington Heights. Someone came up tonight and said, Wheaton, I think it was, it didn't work. Do you know anything about that? Or what it was they were doing and what didn't work? Or?
No, I mean, somebody referenced Hinsdale, and I know Hinsdale had changed their gifted program, and they were in the news last year because, and it has originated. Is Mary here tonight? No. I believe the situation at Hinsdale, I have to kind of go back, so I don't know exactly, is with their gifted identification, when kids moved on to like the next, like the junior high, you automatically were sent on in the gifted program, and other kids had higher test scores and they weren't getting in. And so they hired a consultant who kind of come in and had looked at things. But, and I can, you know, I'm not familiar with, I think it was St. Michael's and that was mentioned too, and I want to look. I mean, my experience with parochial schools is they usually only have one or two sections at a grade level, so you might have more limited opportunities to be able to, you know, from a multi-age perspective.
Well, and I think the other piece on multi-age is that it means different things in different implementations and different configurations. I think many of us have either taught in a multi-age environment, been in schools where multi-age were implemented for a variety of reasons. Some highly successful, and I know we've had multi-age in this district over a period of time, and then so to say that multi-age is the answer, and if you don't do it this way, it won't work, but multi-age has been a strategy for accomplishing this kind of outcome, in other words, maximizing your resources in terms of grouping just like learners and creating perhaps greater flexibility in students to be able to learn at their own pace. And it's also been done just for practical matters. We need another section and we can't afford two more teachers, so we'll split the class in half and create, you know, what was always referred to as a split class. So there are a variety of constellations around why people have created multi-age environments, what their outcome and desired goal was, and so either stay or disband for a variety of reasons, I would presume as well.
Schaumburg School District does multi-age. Collins is one particular elementary school that has seen good success with it. And Schomburg, who has the multi-ages explained, they've got STEM at the junior high. They're going to be adding an elementary building. So we're talking to a couple people there as well about their journey.
So like every industry, you know, you have different definitions depending mm-hmm. on how you implement it.
Correct.
So we should certainly get a definition. At least I'm hearing the definition in our district is for math. It says 85-15% type ratio, and for literacy is more than 50-50 ratio. We should get a definition.
I just had a, I guess maybe a couple comments of maybe some requests. One of the things that, you know, we receive a lot of emails. We are stopped at, you know, sporting events, events with our kids, and grocery store. Everywhere we go, people know us. You know, they stop and ask a question or two. You know, Christmas party, holiday events. And so one of the things that I ask people often when they say, I have concerns, I ask you to please tell me what those concerns are. When you use a word like concern, but there's nothing that explains what your concern is, it's hard for me to respond. It's hard for me to take that information and digest it and see if I can help answer that question. When we make blanket statements like, it didn't work in Arlington Heights, it makes it difficult for me to go to my colleagues in Arlington Heights, because I do have colleagues on school board there, to go to them and say, did this happen in your district? What's the deal with this? Do you guys have this? Because we really do listen to what you have to say, and we take it upon ourselves to investigate those comments and try to do a little research on our own, because that's what we were elected to do. So I would just ask to be more specific. I'd also like to comment on Mr. Cairns. First of all, thank you for having the courage to stand up and say something positive, because it's very easy to sit in the back and not say anything and say, you know, I'm very supportive of this. I just want to listen to what it has to say, what people have to say, versus coming up with a pitchfork and a torch to, you know, tell us all to go home.
Please let me finish.
I gave you the courtesy. Please let me finish.
Please do not refer to us.
I'm not referring to you. I'm not referring to you. If you could please let me finish, I will address that.
Please let Mrs. Howard finish. Thank you.
Please let her finish her comment.
Thank you.
Please let me finish my comment.
Thank you.
My comment to that is, when people make a blanket statement that the board isn't listening, and the board doesn't care about children, and the board doesn't care because they're leaving the board or they don't have a child there, that is offensive to me. I was elected almost 8 years ago. I have served almost 2 terms to make decisions for all of the children in our district, not the ones at the school, just at the schools that my children have attended, but all of the schools and all of our children, regardless of their demographics, all of the children. So when you say the board doesn't care because they're leaving, I do take that personally. And when I see and I get calls from friends that say my name is on the message board and nasty comments are made on Facebook pages, my children, I'm not saying that there's anyone in this room, but we have families here too. So we just ask that people are respectful to us as well. We're doing our best to take in this information and listen and hear the concerns, the positives and negatives on both ends of the spectrum. And we're just asking that. I'm concerned when I hear the staff. When we make blanket statements about the staff, that's not necessarily a fair statement, because we have a significant number of our staff who have participated on this committee and people who are coming forward and supporting the work and continuing to ask questions. And that's what we're doing. We're asking questions about what is being proposed. And I'm asking for people to continue to keep an open mind and to listen, because we're here too, we care too, and we're just trying to understand. I hear these kinds of changes are huge, and they make me nervous. I mean, they should make us all nervous because it's unfamiliar to us. Most of us learn in classrooms where we have one teacher for, you know, a long time. Every day we sat in rows. Everybody was taught the exact same way, regardless of what level they were at reading, at math. We had children with special needs who weren't allowed to attend school with us. They were in another building. Thank God we don't have that anymore. But that's my point. This looks very different to all of us as parents. And so it makes us nervous to see how is this going to work for our kids. But we have to kind of take a step back and be allowed to ask questions, but we also have to be allowed to listen to what the answers are and try to absorb it. And that's what we try to do. My biggest question, Karen, as I get to that, I apologize, is that, you know, there's a lot of questions about piloting. And you know, one of the comments that I've made is we pilot everything that we do. Everything that we do. PBIS, you know, math, social studies, you know, we pilot everything. What's the thought process behind pilot? I understand maybe not a classroom or, you know, one grade level, but, I mean, a building? I mean, what is the thought process behind piloting or not piloting?
Well, and people can kind of, I think they members should jump in here, but we actually talked about piloting, and when we were in Champaign, I remember a couple of people said, now can we, you know, worst case, can we just pilot this at a couple of schools? And we went through some of the pros and cons, how would we make those decisions? You know, I had a parent who called and asked, you know, if you're going to pilot, I want my name on the list, you know, that sort of a thing.
Right.
And we actually talked about it in follow-up at an ad team meeting. Someone had suggested, you know, let teachers apply who really want to teach it. But, you know, then if you're lucky enough to have that school, that you had all the first-year people who work gung-ho and, you know, some of those kinds of things. So we actually will go back and have that conversation about piloting because that's what we've heard from people and who is ready and how will we know what buildings are ready.
Well, maybe one of the things around piloting, too, would be to share, and maybe you have. I just haven't seen it, but just the pros and cons, just so the community can understand. I'm assuming you guys reached this conclusion of implementation based on maybe the board always saying, hey, we need to move faster as an element of
let's take some responsibility.
And perhaps you also, you know, have other reasons, and it'd be nice to understand maybe, you know, pilot versus non-pilot.
I think part of it, John, was the charge from the board initially, but I think that is that the think tank came together and started talking about it. There was a kind of a great sense of excitement that formed around it. There was pretty good representation from all the schools, and so for us to start talking about, well, let's just do it in one place and everybody else you can kind of wait, this was not how the conversation evolved.
Right.
And so I think that everybody that was a part of this and started seeing vision for this, we're excited by it, we're kind of charged by it, and that's the way it.
Well, and that's, you know, that's always been at least part of my little contribution, which is that, you know, let's move faster. I think we got an email today on how long it took us to implement little, you know, baby steps in some of the curriculum, right? So we've always said, let's move fast, let's make it happen. And as a district, if we get the excitement, let's move forward.
The visits to each of the schools and having conversations with staff members and hearing questions, and that also is developing a sense of readiness more or less, you know, where is the readiness at individual buildings as teachers become more informed as well. That information going back to think tank, hopefully the representatives from each of the buildings will have a better handle on their own building too, in terms of readiness and the ability for all of the elementaries to feel at that point to move forward. So I think that's part of the unfolding data.
The other question I had about that then in terms of the piloting piece was in terms of the professional development. I mean, how, and I know our team, our learning,
Teams for Excellence.
Teams for Excellence. I know that Lori and her committee are always on top of that, but in terms of professional development, if there aren't curriculum changes, per se, I mean, it sounds like there's really not a new curriculum. What types of professional development do you guys foresee that's really necessary?
I think it's an opportunity to, if they specialize in content, is to take some of that time and really go deeper. How are you going to kind of stretch their thinking, those kinds of things. We've been meeting, Ann and Julie and I have been going to each of the elementary schools and talking to the teachers and just answering questions and processing. Right now, they're more interested in the detail, you know, things like curriculum guide and, you know, all of those things that are on our list. So we want to be sure that all of that is well communicated and teachers would feel comfortable with what that would be. And then we still have opportunities through Institute Days to focus their PD time around math or literacy. What would be new to second grade teachers would be the literacy modules, but still grounded in the same framework that they've been teaching. So giving them that time to really come together, study it, kind of begin to plan it. You'll see a lot of PD evolving with your dean teachers the following year around the new curriculum.
But we also talked about in the spring that having the STEAM teachers have a chance to examine the current science curriculum for the overlap and combining particular units that align with the Common Core in a sequence and many units that have not been done. So the students would not be repeating, but so having time for that coordination.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So I also think just getting to know a new team, because right now we're a grade level team and then we're going to become a subject area team as well. So just figuring out what we can learn from each other, who has the talents in this and that and the other things so that we can divide things up so it's most beneficial to the students.
Just to piggyback on that a little bit, I guess, have we determined, I mean, it's a fair statement to say that if we move to this model, half of the staff, roughly, will have to be literacy specialists, the other half will have to be math specialists. Mm-hmm. Do we have any confidence or any idea that the staff is actually willing to choose one or the other? In other words, what if we do a survey and there's 90% of the staff wants to do literacy? Then what do we do?
We have not surveyed the staff at this point. We've talked with each building about, you know, the ability to choose and identify, would I prefer being a STEAM teacher or a literacy teacher. There are probably natural tendencies for either among our staff, whether it's a 50-50 split. I don't know that, you know, the principals would be much better suited to answer that question, but at this point we haven't surveyed them yet. We're, you know, again, still early in the conversations with them and helping them wrap their heads around the questions that they have, as Karen said, mostly logistical.
Sam, what I found is that a certain number of staff do definitely have a preference. They come out and told me what they would could see themselves in this type of model, but then another percentage of the staff have told me, you know what, I'm good with either. You tell, you know, tell me where you need me, and I will zero in on that, focus in on that, and do that particular position. So I think we have enough flexibility in that.
Today, if I have six second grade classes at Churchill, and next year I only have four, a teacher goes to two of those teachers go to third grade, or loop, or go to first grade, I mean, right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, every year.
You have to make those shifts anyway.
And, you know, Tim, I have the luxury of working with teachers on all different kinds of curriculum committees, and you can see teachers who are kind of more passionate about, you know, their love for math, and it comes out in their teaching. And like Kirk said, there are some, though, who could go either way, and others are really thinking, you know, they're very excited about that opportunity. And what's come up from some of the teachers is, well, could I switch after a couple of years? You know, those kinds of things. But I think naturally most teachers will fall. But it's a great professional conversation to have with their building administrators. And right now, you know, you asked, are we asking them to be literacy specialists and math specialists and that? We ask them to be specialists in everything. right now. And historically, that's what elementary people have had to do. But we know, as we start to look at the Common Core, I mean, even from the math perspective, is Jeannie?
She's here, too.
we've been talking about, too, is as you take some of this, what has historically been like sixth grade content, and you see evidence of it now in fourth and fifth grade, some of our teachers may not have the same level of confidence they had with the
Jeannie, is that,
am I,
oh, you're right.
With that type of content, and how do we create those learning opportunities for them so that they feel they can now do
the deeper work,
whatever those equations and some of the things we were talking about tonight.
I also think that we're, teachers in general are a very self-reflective group, and we know ourselves and we know our strengths. And in engaging casual conversation with my current team, I teach second grade over at Lincoln, we've already sort of said, well, you do this and you do that, in just casual conversation. Not that anything's written in stone or that that would work out that way, but we know each other so well that we know where our strengths lie. And we, again, the professional conversations that we engage in help us.
So, you know, we get in these emails, right, I was trying to summarize some of the areas, but there's discussion around teacher's contract isn't finalized. Is there anything we've seen in this that creates a problem from a teacher's contract perspective? And maybe I'll look more at the teachers here on this, but is there should that be a concern or not? All right.
John, I think we need to answer that question.
Yeah. I think that we're out of order on that. I mean, it's a good, it's a thought bubble.
Summary point
but,
of emails
yeah.
we've all gotten.
Mm-hmm.
The contract doesn't tell us about those things.
Yeah. This is, Steve, you haven't said anything. Dan, also, we don't forget that you're in the black box here.
Yeah, I got
questions, comments?
Yeah, sure. I got a few comments followed by a question. Hopefully you guys can hear me okay.
Yes, thank you.
I've only heard a few people talk, so I only assume there's like five or six people there from the public.
No, there's
no, we
about,
had a really good group.
I would say about 70, maybe. Maybe
excellent.
Not. Maybe not quite that many.
Well, you know, for people that know me, they know I'm an engineer, and I'm always trying to push it on other people. And I always see it in the workplace whenever we go out searching for engineer and math and science candidates, there's just not a lot out there. So I've always, even when I was running for the board, have been pushing for the district to do more along the science, math, and engineering, which is why I get goosebumps when you guys talk about STEAM and STEM labs. So that's one, you know, positive I'm seeing, and hope to see that move forward here quickly. The other thing is the, you know, the TLT, the targeted learning time, I guess this new mixed concept to me is very interesting. One of my sons is doing well in reading, and so he's done some of these TLTs, but one of the comments he said is he doesn't like it when he's away from a large group of kids and is in a small group, you know, just doing a book report or reading a book together. So I guess I see this as an opportunity for him to get that, you know, extra challenge that he's looking for, but still have it feel like a normal classroom, which is something that he's expressed as being more comfortable with. And then one of the other things, too, you know, I did reach out, I think it was Tara Erica was saying, I have a colleague that works in Schaumburg, or lives in Schaumburg, and they have a child that went through some of the mixed-age classrooms, and they only reported positive results to me. You know, first, when their child was the younger one, they felt like they were helped with some older mentors, and they always thought they were kind of cool when they could walk by that older kid and wave and say, hey, I know who that is. And then on the other side, once they got older, they took that same learnings and mentorship that they had and applied it to the younger kids. And, you know, my colleague said she even saw it spill outside of school in some athletics where she would see some of those same leadership characteristics displayed. You know, one of the big things I kind of get frustrated with is, you know, seeing the email we got today, it just feels like there's there's still a lot of misinformation out there. So, you know, I applaud anyone that's coming to these sessions and listening and asking questions and, you know, trying to get as much as possible straight from the horse's mouth. I've always been, you know, pushing communication. And, you know, as a board, we've been talking about bits and pieces of this for quite a long time. So, you know, I get a little frustrated when you hear the comment that someone felt it was kind of sprung on the community when, in fact, it's been in the conversation for a long time. But I guess my takeaway from that is maybe, you know, the communication needs to be more the outreach. You know, I mean, there is a lot of communication now. But, you know, so maybe I know, Erica, you and I were looking at ways that we could go out into the community and do more conversation, more communication. So I know I've been busy and haven't done as much as that, but maybe it's now time to pick up that torch again.
Mm-hmm. You can do that. Did you did you have a question too, Dan? Because we have members of the think tank here as well as principals and certainly Karen.
Yeah, so yeah, my question, I had a question around the pilot, just, you know, and someone already asked that, so I'd like to understand what the think tank, and it sounds like there is a go back to where the think tank will look at that and come back with some thoughts on that for how they might pilot it, you know, which feeds into an implementation timeline if you're doing some partial pilot. Someone did talk a little bit about the teachers picking, but one thing I did want to understand from a question perspective is the prep. You know, I've heard there's not enough time for teachers to get ready for this, so I'd just like to understand what sort of prep, you know, would be required and how long that would take.
I think that's too, Karen. Did you hear his question? It's around the, I can think back to professional development, so around what, you know, kind of level. Dan, I don't know if you could hear, but Patty Dettinger, who's a second grade teacher at Lincoln, talked about the kind of professional conversations that some grade levels have been having around what is it that you do well, what would we need to do. So there's some anecdotal conversation, but you're looking more of it from here's point A, to get to point B, how do we get there? What is it?
How much time would it take the teachers to be really
up
ready
to, speed.
To implement in the fall?
Okay. That's a good question.
Well, and I don't know that I have kind of an exact number. I guess I feel like, you know, I have the confidence that, you know, we can figure out the details in that and teachers would feel equipped. I think for them, they're more nervous about the logistics as opposed to being able to teach.
One of our teachers from Churchill said the other day when we were at lunch, said,
who may or may not be here.
Yeah. Said, I'm not, and if I misquote you, please let me know. I'm not worried about how I'm going to teach next year. I'm worried about how I'm going to get kids in and out of snow pants and, you know, from the portable and back if the transition between the literacy and the STEM, so that it really was affirming of what Karen has said. The logistics were less of a, more concern, and the teaching less concern. Is that a fair summary?
Yep. We've talked about a think tank too, trying to create an experience for kids and adults in May. You know, just to kind of emulate, to get a sense of what it would look like and feel like, because we think that would help everybody kind of wrap their heads around that. And a lot of times in teaching, we talk about, you know, what does it look like, sound like, feel like, what does it look like, you know, kind of those three things. And we think that experience, and we would learn some things, but opportunities for teachers to really understand.
Karen, it's funny you said that, though, about the little things, the logistics of how am I going to do. And at that learning leadership team, continuous improvement team meeting presentation, and when we were breaking out into groups, those were the questions. That was the center of our conversation was, how are we going to do parent-teacher conferences? Who's going to have that? What about open house? And as a board member sitting there, I thought, well, I don't know, don't you just figure that out later? But then as a parent, I thought, well, yeah, who am I going to meet with? Is it going to be like 18 teachers I got to talk to? Or, you know, how am I going to know? But what struck me as was that the people that were there, I'm sorry, our staff is the best and the brightest. And to suggest that they can't do this, it's almost insulting to them. It is almost insulting to our staff to suggest that they can't do this or that they're unwilling to do it. And I
think
don't get
desire.
It. I don't get yeah. why people think they can't. I'm sorry, I keep looking this way at you, Barbie, but I'm laughing because I sit at these meetings with our staff and those are not the questions. That is not the conversation. It's when can we do this? How can we do this better? How can I meet? How do I reach that child? That is what I hear. And to suggest they can't do this or are unwilling is really just, that's not what I hear from our staff.
And I think a part of that, to kind of close that, is that in a lot of the documentation we've gotten and the questions we've been asked, it's around, will they be given enough support to do it? And I think those are questions being answered by Think Tank as we move forward. And, it's an absolutely fair question. I have one piece to add to this that came up as a theme at the Forest Glen meeting last Tuesday night, and then I have a couple comments to close. And that is our special education students and concerns about any significant changes in what already is best practice and next practice and how that may or may not change. So I'm hopeful that the think tank, and Karen, you mentioned to me that you are, is focusing in on that. We got a great set of questions from Laura. I don't know if she's still here. Yes, thank you. And your partners on that, so appreciate that. I know that Anne had received that, obviously, and then she sent it also to board members. So thank you for putting the time into doing that, and that the think tank is going back to look, specifically at some of those, individual questions, et cetera. So
can I add to that? Are you going to go to another topic?
No, I just have a couple comments to make, and then I'm done. Go ahead. Well, no, go ahead. If it's special education.
With special ed, I just want to reinforce, because I think that was my biggest concern coming into tonight, that needs to be addressed. One of the things I think I heard, which I liked, is the word heterogeneous, which I think is more philosophical with what we've been trying to do with special education. Not, I think some of the emails we got around that was, my kid will always be in the lower class. So I like the fact that we were thinking about the heterogeneous aspects of it, and also did want to praise the email we got because it was very specific, very direct around, what some of the issues are, and really, I think, is going to make this a better solution if we move forward with this because of that. So I definitely appreciated that, and I also know that if there's any group of parents in this district that will work, hard with us to make something like this successful through this group, so I do want to thank you for that. Whoever said it, I don't know who you are.
Raise your hand, Lauren.
Back there. The purple sweatshirt. Yeah. Thank you, Dan.
You kind of prompted another thought that I had, too. When we did some of the site visits, and I'll use Waukesha in particular, they had kids who were included. They had kids who just had resource level of minutes. So they were very much a part of the school, just as we would want them to be. And I know one of the questions was around PBL, and one of the gentlemen who did the training, he is a...
Karen, what's PBL?
Project-based learning.
Thank you.
Sorry. He's a principal of a special ed school, and it's... I can't remember exactly where it is. But they're all of their... they're kind of grounded in project-based learning, and they have found it to be very successful with all of their special needs kids and that. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to contact him, too, to get a little bit more specifics from that special ed kid, mm-hmm. because that was one of our conversations early on, is the importance of making sure our second language learners, our special ed students, any of our at-risk learners or kids who are struggling have those same opportunities around STEAM, because we know that when they're exposed to that and given that, that they can rise to the occasion and contribute and benefit, and others can learn a lot from it as well.
Absolutely. So thank you.
Eric, I have two more questions. Do you want me to ask them, or do you want to? Are you wrapping up? I wasn't sure.
No, I was going to say I'll do a wrap up, but go ahead and ask your questions. Okay. And I think you had one.
One of the other.
And
topics.
Then we need to wrap for our.
We'll be coming back.
Next really important conversation.
I have a couple too, actually.
Two more. Okay.
Go ahead, John.
Thank you. On the social emotional, it's another concept that comes up a lot. I think you've cleared up for me a few areas around transition. And, you know, it's not teacher to teacher. I think we got an email around some research that was done around that. I think one of the people was like Van der Waal, and I Googled this guy, and I think he died. So I couldn't reach him. But then there was a gentleman in the Netherlands or something, Haiti, John.
John Hattie.
Hattie, mm-hmm. That I'm trying to set up a conference call with. But it seemed the thinking behind it was, you know, one teacher all day to nurture and take care of a child all day versus the inability of, let's say, two teachers to do that, a STEM and a literacy teacher, or that transition to two teachers is not embedded in best practices or the research around the social-emotional care of a child. And the social-emotional part is important. Any discussion around that? I mean, I personally believe that teachers are capable of providing the social-emotional needs of children, whether it's one or two, maybe a difference between one or eight, but I just wondering, is that a teacher who feels that they're just so important to the child and they want to be with them all day long and it's more self-serving, or is that based in research of, you know, you really need to be with one person at this age?
It's a different group of kids in the morning and in the afternoon, too.
Sorry, I can't hear you.
It's a different, that child was a different teacher and a different group of kids in the morning and in the afternoon.
That's a good point. So it's the social emotional of the teacher and then the social emotional of a different group.
Mm-hmm. We can speak to the social emotional. I've talked to kindergarten teachers, and Jennifer still didn't ask, so
yeah, I mean, that's what we do at half day kindergarten. Not only kindergarten for a number of years before I came to this district, but half day kindergarten, we have, you know, 22, I've been here for the days of 26 and 27, AM and PM, and so they are different groups. And you do the best you can to meet all of their needs and needs of parents. sometimes they have more nutrition from time to time. And we love them up, and they do a pretty good job at that. And our kids now do go and visit other teachers. You know, we have PE teachers that nurture our kids and tie the shoes for them when they go to PE. We have art teachers that are, you know, wiping the noses and helping out too. Same with the music teachers and maybe interventionists like our prison teachers as well. So I think as a staff, our building, I'm at Lincoln, and I've been at Franklin, and I've also been at Forest Glen. I have not met a more dedicated, caring group of people in the three buildings I work in. And it's all about the kids. And even if it isn't your kid, and you see someone in the hall that needs help, you jump in and help them. So I don't know if that really answers your question.
Yeah, I'm just trying to, I mean, you know, this email was pretty, you know, was based on some research. I was trying to understand the research, and I didn't know if you guys looked at the research and, you know, to the point back there that there's two aspects of it, the teacher and then the different kids. Have you guys looked at that? Did you put pros and cons that we should be looking at? Or
well, and we've had a lot of conversation around the social emotional benefits, and one of the areas, too, that we actually had one of our think tank members who was really kind of struggling with that in the beginning. As we began to kind of process and talk about it, the benefit of the potential for a two-year relationship, because you would have those same, your second graders you have as third graders. So then you already know them as learners in that. And some of our kids will go on with some of the same kids, And I think just as we do now, if we know things about certain kids that would benefit them through a certain buddy or whatever it happened to be, I would assume our principals would be very cognizant of that and strategic in making sure that happened. And currently, some of our most fragile kids are the most fragmented and see the most number of adults because of interventions or minutes and so, you know, the social worker and things like that. So you're still going to have that case manager who will probably be that child's primary advocate in working through that.
I just think we're going to have to be able to answer that from both the perspective of the teacher and the kids. Mm-hmm. And then my last question is one you know I'm going to ask, foreign language.
You missed the conversation earlier.
Foreign language will be coming for discussion to the board next month.
Yep.
Not connected to things.
Right.
But
so
think Tank was aware of it.
Yes, I was just trying to clear up some things here. But I'll let you guys talk.
Good questions, John. Thank you. Sam, you had a couple?
Well, I'll switch the order since John brought up foreign language. To me, I can't.
We talked about it earlier.
We talked about it earlier. I must have missed it as well. But
it was in finance.
In the finance meeting, okay. I can't see how, if we're talking about foreign language and the think tank work in a parallel universe, at some point we're going to intersect them. I'm not sure why we're not doing that right now. Because if we implement the new think tank plan, we have a day lined up after clearly months of thinking and strategizing, and then we throw in a foreign language aspect to it, and isn't that going to flip everything over and we have to start over again? I mean, that's more of a statement than a question, but that's part of my concern as well.
Well, and we have Katie McCluskey here, too, who is our district foreign language specialist. So.
I think that through things, I've been on the think tank as well. This year I was brought into think tank, so that's something that we've kept in mind when we've been building schedules as something to add time to. But I think it's also something that we haven't been able to implement fully into think tank because it's not something that's been approved to bring forward. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, that
the conversation has been had at Think Tank in terms of where would you add foreign language in this schedule. So they're
it's
in the conversation, but it's not part of the overall reporting of Think Tank because that's not their charge.
But we were very well aware of it as we, you know, it was at every conversation, and having to be a part of.
And that also sort of dovetails into my next question, which foreign languages as a concept, it hasn't been approved. And is it fair to say that to fully implement this current think tank process, we have to have full-day kindergarten?
Well, if you wanted to do the K-1...
Well, I'm sorry, that's what I mean by fully implement K-1. K, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I mean, you have to have full-day kindergarten to make it work.
To do that, yes.
Well, okay.
Do not space
I don't know why you would do this without doing the whole...
You don't have space for full-day kindergarten, so... Does that mean you scrap an entire plan because you don't have space because of space constraints?
I think maybe you have to consider that.
Well, we've also... we had one of our conversations at one of the schools... was focused a great deal on K-1, and the kindergarten and first grade teachers were, you know, providing some insights they had, and you know, one of the things that Think Tank has suggested that next year, if this moves forward, that there be some exploration of, is there a point in the year where some of our K's and 1's might look at what would that look like for us, and have further exploration about it. Could you do this process without including K-1, and K-1 remains, you know, separate classrooms? Yes, you could.
You could, but would you want to? I guess
Well, the ideal and the practical, you know, you're asking Think Tank to go back and alter their ideal to think about other things. So, you know, we'd say the same thing about K-1. Ideal and practical, what we're able to do, might not be the same things. So while, I don't want to get Jennifer started, but, yeah, Jennifer would, she would have an opinion on that. But so while, yes, I think they would say, there are all kinds of things as you think about ideas. You've been charged to create ideas. You know, that's what a think tank is supposed to do. So the ideas generated, as Karen has described before, have gone through a great vetting process as well as saying, what are the barriers to this? What are the green hat, black hat, and all that stuff, which they've described to you in the past. So that would be great. It may not be practical for many years.
I guess for me around that, outside of that, those are such, important years in terms of sponginess and development. Anything we can do to impact that outside of going the full day, because obviously at this point we're not going that route, but I think it's still something that the think tank needs to think about. I didn't deliver that well. but I do think that they're just, again, if the research says differently, but from what I've read, it's very important time. And really, where some kids come in at very different levels. So I would just not want to abandon, and I know we're not abandoning, but the idea of what do we do for K, or first grade, maybe a little differently, that may not fit this model, but definitely takes advantage of what these kids can learn and grasp so quickly.
Well, John, it's interesting that you end on that note because I think some of us here were at the Glenbard Parent Series speaker last week, Dr. Michael Bradley, who's come a couple times to the GPS series. If you don't know about it, go online to District 87 because they're really, really good conversations. And we should be having, we shouldn't wait till high school to go to these because it's really about developmental processes for all our kids. Anyway, one of the things he talked about with the kind of brain development for children is that there has been this concept that it was called the first five. And those first 5 years, it all gets done then. And then after that, good luck. And he put, his own research and research out there talks about the importance of those first 5 years, but also the incredible importance of building on those and doing the kind of things that are going to stretch that kind of brain capacity all the way up till our kids turn. And this is what he said. Not till 24, 25 are all those synapses coming together where they're fully an adult brain. So those of us who thought it was 18, yeah. So very interesting, and I think was very germane to our conversation here, so it made me think a lot about what we're doing. I just want to say a couple of things. First of all, we have a second discussion, which is on our fund balances, so if you're interested in that, I would love to have you, welcome you to stay and hear that conversation. I want to thank everybody who came out tonight and who continues to come to the dialogue, who continues to send in questions and ask questions, and I think my feeling tonight in terms of hearing board members ask some really good, thoughtful questions and make good, thoughtful comment is that I hope that those who might think that board members, because my son graduated last year from Hadley, so I kind of care less about this, it couldn't be further from the truth. Both my kids have really benefited from District 41. There is not, then they were Churchill graduates and Hadley graduates. And I think that what we, as a board, and we've talked about this over time when we have time together in workshop time, et cetera, is how incredibly important it is to show community, to Dan's point about communication, et cetera, that we, regardless of where we are at in terms of our own life cycle with our own children or not having children, is that we're here because we really believe we're stewards and ambassadors for the district. And we care equally and immeasurably about the comments from everybody. And for those who are, what might be described as innovators who want to hop on board and just go, to those who are thoughtful, reflective, and create great questions, to give pause. All of that is absolutely critical to any kind of commitment to education. So I know that the board is has commented on that, and I just wanted to summarize that, that's been an incredibly important part of this and also a real eye-opening part for board members. So know that. We know that our questions will be answered. We'll continue to have conversation. We'll be at the January and February dialogues, just like many of you will be, and that we'll look forward to the think tank recommendations as they come out. I want to acknowledge also the information that's out through parents who are very concerned, and the set of questions that are on the Facebook page, which I had a chance to look at, along with some other pieces. And it was edifying for me to go back through this again and think about the Forest Glen meeting. I was able to make notes where I believe these questions have been vetted. Maybe not as completely as parents need, but please know that these questions, these concerns, are at the top of the list for both the board as well as the administration, and certainly for the think tank.
Well, and I would just note that we'll continue to update the FAQ that's on our website. It was updated today, and we'll just continue to update that to try to make it as fluid as possible.
Yeah.
Responding to questions as we get them. You might not see your exact question that you might have raised answered in that. You know, we try to take the themes, try to take a little bit more global look at that. I also want to thank the parents who have been here, as well as all of the teachers who have continued to attend, not only members of Think Tank who have come to try to help clarify, but also teachers who are not members of Think Tank who have come and tried to gain their own knowledge and may have a better understanding of it. I think that speaks highly not only of each of them, but the whole of the District 41 community, which is to grow and learn together.
Right. So thank you very, very much. Board members, thank you. Dan, thank you very much for hanging in there on your speakerphone.
Sure.
You still have a long ways to go.
Yeah, don't go anywhere. Go get a bottle of water. Again, we welcome you to stay for our next discussion topic and the rest of the meeting. There will be public participation again at the end of the meeting, as we normally do. For those who have to leave, thank you very much for being here. This is our last December meeting, and we'll meet again in January. Please go to the website to double-check our times. Yeah, so thank you. Those who have to leave, thank you very much for being here. We appreciate it. We continue the conversation.
Okay, our next item for discussion, and again, no action will be following this item at our next board meeting. We probably will want further conversation relative to this, but as we reach that point in the year where we're looking at the percentage of our fund balance, Finance Committee asked us to look at what recommendations I'll wait, because I think board members aren't listening either. Okay,
just
5 minutes?
Yeah, people will be. Yeah. And if you're staying, please feel free to come, you know, closer to the front so you can be a part of the conversation. We took a quick break, so Anne will reset the conversation on fund balances.
Each year, the board, based on our policy, asks us to indicate whether or not our fund balances have exceeded the policy, which indicates a 25% of total budget, operating budget, as our fund balance. And if it exceeds that 25%, then to bring a plan for that additional revenue and what we might do with it. And so this evening, Bob is going to share with you two recommendations that the administration has for the additional 8% of fund balance that is above 25%.
So, as Ann stated earlier, I've been asked to put together a capital projects plan. As you know, we have a working document that we use in my office. It takes us out 15 or 20 years. And I've been asked to put together a presentation of what would we do with fund balances should we decide to spend them on capital projects over the next 5 years. So we've taken that 5 or 6 page document, narrowed it down. You have a presentation, or you have a copy of something that I presented earlier this evening that includes roof replacement, parking lots, HVAC, univent replacement, things of that nature.
That's what you mean, or is right?
That's what I mean right there, sir.
Is that what's on the screen right now?
No.
No. The other thing, Sam, is this.
It's the back data around the recommendation.
So each of you have that packet in front of you. They've asked me to sort of narrow down that presentation this evening due to the time. So you can go back, you can take a look at it, what it is. It's, as I said, roofs, parking lots, univents, big ticket items out there that we've tried to identify projects when they were originally completed, which is anywhere from about 1988 to about 2001, and when we would estimate that they will be completed, when they need to be replaced or revamped, again, in the near future. So what we have currently is we ended with $18-plus million in fund balances for this year. That takes us about 8% or $5 million above the 25% threshold that the board established a couple of years ago. So we've got two recommendations, actually, for the board to consider, and that would be to commit capital projects, commit an X number of dollars to capital projects over the next 5 years, or ultimately look at property acquisition somewhere down the road. That would include the $5 million that we've already identified, in addition to any additional reserves or surpluses that we may accumulate over the next 5 years. So just to summarize, what I've done is you have the years 2014 to 2018 in the projects that we would recommend that we take a look at over the next several years. 2014, you already have the Hadley LMC, Hadley Painting. All of the buildings need some fire alarm and intercom replacement work. Those are estimated at about $35,000 to $40,000 a building. We'll continue the rollout of 21st century furniture. We're going to bring a recommendation after the first of the year to the board that we ramp up that introduction next year to 32 classrooms, which will then give us over half the classrooms at the elementary level where that had been implemented. We've also budgeted money for STEM and STEAM construction. We've taken that in the operating funds as well as out of fund balances. I guess I should step back just for a second. What we've done is we've identified projects that we would consider for work out of operating funds. We budget about $1.5 million a year in capital projects for the district. These are projects that we would recommend to be done over the next 5 years out of current operating funds. And then we should we move forward with a recommendation to utilize fund balances, these are additional projects that we would look at over the next several years.
So, Bob, the projects on the top half, so to speak,
yep,
are already currently budgeted, accounted for in current budgeting process?
Well, these here in the 2014, this goes out to all the way to 2018.
So we haven't done those budgets, so we don't know if we have enough funds to complete those.
Well, that's what we've
scheduled projects, but
right, that's what we have historically budgeted for that type of work.
So we budgeted $1.5 million roughly, and you're saying based on that going out, these are the projects, but then these are additional ones that would add up to.
Well, currently, right, and we've got about $12.5 million to work with over the next 5 years. I realize 8, 6 is 14, but, you know, that's something. We have these. We have this large spreadsheet that we track all of our capital projects. We annually review that, and then we prioritize in terms of what work needs to be done, what work could be done.
And that is also an attachment in board book for you, the full plan.
Right.
That's correct.
And then this is the backup material,
right,
to that.
The full, yep, plans.
Yeah.
Yeah.
John, to your point, I have money in here budgeted, improvements to existing facilities to meet the needs, and I guess I misspelled that, didn't I, of 21st century learners. What we'd like to do, not 2014, but moving forward, because we need some time to develop it, we're looking actually, my thought was to develop sort of pods within a building where we might combine four classrooms and have maybe built around a STEM lab, STEAM lab, or whatever that option may look like. We've talked about it for the past couple of years, so we've actually budgeted at least $250,000 per year over the next 4 years as we move forward with that type of plan. So, as I said, we budget about $1.5 million. We go from about $1,475,000 up to $1,750,000, and then down here on the projects funded out of fund balances, we go from $2.7 million down to about $700,000, even $250,000 over here in 2018. These are not written in stone. We use it as a tool to help us budget annually and allow us to continually review capital projects. Any questions? We had this presentation earlier this evening, so we spent some time on it earlier.
So in the process, again, like we normally do, this will come back in January.
I don't envision this coming back in January. We just wanted to bring a recommendation to the board this evening that we do have a plan in place that we can either commit fund balances to capital projects or we've even discussed property acquisition somewhere down the road. So we have a plan for those funds.
Right, because the question that was put to us was to think about what might the board consider, you know, in addition to what's already out there. And actually it came up, because Sam and John brought it up too, the whole issue of foreign language. So it's timely that Karen and Katie gave us a presentation, because now we see those dollars and where those dollars might need to come from. But
well, and let me make a distinction there. Foreign language would have to be funded with operating dollars.
Right.
We would not ask to use fund balance for that unless it was for one-time costs,
right.
As opposed to ongoing operational costs.
Maybe my question then is, if the board sees that as a priority, because we've talked about that, how are we able to shift some dollars that we might need in order to make that happen in the way that we wanted to for the district, versus not being able to do it well?
Exactly.
You know?
But those are different conversations.
Yeah.
What it most likely would mean is that any future accumulation of fund balance is probably very minimal. Mm-hmm. You know, that we would be looking at reprioritizing within our operating expenditures to be able to afford foreign language. So it's a matter of priorities within your budgeting process in order to make that happen. So you may see that the ability to accumulate fund balances would diminish, and you'd have some competition, perhaps, and maybe some rethinking if you said, well, if that's the case, maybe it's okay to leave it above 25%. You know, just to be sure we have that additional cushion. Mm-hmm. But we would not come to you other than to say, we would take $50,000 out of fund balance to do a professional growth activity that we think, you know, it's a one-shot deal or something like that it would be a startup that we would only use that money once, and we would not be coming back to that well again, because otherwise you get yourself into a structural deficit.
Right, and we know we don't do structural deficits, right? So, I mean, even the PMA presentation, when Mike did that, when we look out to 2018, which this kind of aligns with, we see the fund balance as a percent of our expenditures down to 27.68%. Mm-hmm. You know, so we know that there's a descending fund balance in our future anyway.
Well, but that assumes you don't make changes in your operations, which you'd have to, because we wouldn't want to.
Right, we don't want. Right, that's my point. We don't want to get down there. Yeah. So,
well, what might happen is that you find that the $1.5 million, which I think Samuel alluded to earlier, the $1.5 million that we annually budget for capital expenditures maybe becomes $800,000. And some of those projects on the bottom fall off because we need them to be funded on the top. Mm-hmm. And then you're using fund balance to help support what you would normally do in in a given year.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Sorry. Explain to me. I didn't get it. That why we can't use the fund balance to fund, for lack of a better term, the foreign language program.
Well, according to board policy, the administration is not. We are not for lack of a better term, allowed to present the board with a deficit program, a deficit plan. It says that we will annually present to the Board of Education a balanced budget.
Sam, one of the things you'd see is after it's fully implemented, it would cost around $700,000 a year, and so you would chew through the fund balances in, you know, 3, 5, 6 years, and then you don't have it anymore, and then you're running a structural deficit.
It's kind of like having a grant that ends, and then you have to support them. Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
One of the questions that I was asked this week was about, the whole teacher, the pension thing that's out there. And is it possible for us to save or set aside funds from with our fund balance to have in case this...
I think it's coming. And right now the plan is out there for about 0.5% annually to be rolled back to the local level.
Right, for the next 20 years.
Over the next several decades or however that plans to be. And yes, we'll have to make adjustments accordingly to accommodate those issues.
But again, you would run into the same problem that Sam was alluding to, and that is that those become operating expenditures.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Okay, I just wanted to ask a question because it had been raised by a couple of people to me this week, and I wanted to make sure that I asked it.
It's a conversation that we have frequently in terms of what the implications, what are the long-range implications to us financially.
So when we're looking at this, when we think about what the next steps are for the board to consider, you know, we have been asked to kind of put those priorities down, so if people have other comments other than what's listed here, I would want to get those on the table for Bob. But we know that the LMC for Hadley is going out to bid, so we'll just wait and see, you know, what comes back for that, and then that will help to drive some of the decision making.
Well, the top part of the spreadsheets reflect what we would try to do annually within operating. So the approval process really would be an annual approval process where what portion of that 25% are we requesting permission to expend in that year.
Right, in some of these other projects.
As opposed to doing it all in 1 year.
Yeah. Which we would come back annually and present this.
So to that end, one question I'm trying to understand is, it says in the recommendation, it talks about District 41 committing to either the projects or maintaining it for property acquisition. Mm-hmm. So how does that commitment occur? Is it a resolution or what is it?
I think we would bring it to you as a an action item, and I think that's part of the discussion that is, I don't believe you need to, we need to bring this back to you for action in January, certainly before we construct the budget for FY14, but what we'd like to hear from the board is whether one, are you in support of these ideas, this concept, this approach, and then secondly, do you have a preference about land acquisition set aside versus capital projects? Because we would bring you a single recommendation.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's important because it does show the commitment. Otherwise, I'd be concerned if we just said, here's what we want to do, and then, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 years go by, and nothing's affected, and now the fund balance has grown even larger.
Right. I think you need to take action annually on whatever portion is being recommended or whatever recommendation, if it's not an expenditure, it is a savings, so to speak, a set aside. You need to take action annually on that.
Any other questions?
Thanks for doing this. Dan, to your point earlier in finance, you thanked Bob for the spreadsheet.
Thanks, Bob.
So we just need to make review the entire full spreadsheet and make a decision what our preference would be versus the capital projects versus the property acquisition fund.
And it potentially could be in, doesn't have to be an either or. It could be X dollars are set aside for property acquisition, X dollars are used for capital projects. But I think that's a discussion that the board can have, you know, we could bring this back in January for discussion and then follow that up after we get a sense of where your interests are with a more refined action. You get, this gives you a chance to study it a little bit.
All right, that was the last. Any other questions? And again, ongoing conversation. So like we are typically do, if there's questions for Bob, as they come up, you know, get them to him, and then he can have an ongoing conversation. All right, next item, our action items, our consent agenda. Are there any items board members would like removed from the consent agenda to be considered separately? Hearing none, may have a motion to approve the consent agenda, which includes human resources, the personnel report, employment recommendations and resignations, finance, facilities and operations, the treasurer's report, investment schedule, monthly revenue and expenditure summary report, the summary of bills and payroll, school district payment order, vandalism damage report, disposal of surplus property, and the 2012-2013 FOIA report. And item three, other matters, board meeting minutes from the November 26, 2012 regular meeting. May I have a motion?
Motion.
Second.
Roll call, please.
Mr. Kenwood?
Yes.
Mr. Von Rath?
Yes.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Mr. Power?
Yes.
Mr. Black?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes. Superintendent recommendations. The resolution to adopt the 2012 tax levy. The board discussed the 2012 proposed tax levy recommendation at its November 2012 meetings and adopted a resolution of levy intent on November 12, 2012. The truth in taxation hearing on the proposed 2012 tax levy was held earlier this evening. May I have a motion to adopt the certificate of levy and the tax levy resolution as presented?
Motion. Second.
Discussion. Any comments? I know that I sent my comments out to the board, so if people had any questions for me, I'm certainly happy to answer them. Comments? All right. Roll call, please.
Mr. Von Rath?
Yes.
Mrs. Howard?
Yes.
Mr. Black?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Mr. Kenwood?
Yes.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes. School improvement plans. May I have a motion to approve the administration's recommendation to approve the school improvement plans as submitted?
Motion.
Second.
Discussion.
I'd like to note for you that the Hadley plan, we just held back. It's close to being finished with the new format in Churchill. While I've given you the updated, their old plan, their plan was only 1 year old, and Hadley's was 2 years old, really in its third year. And so we've just decided we'll bring that back to you when those are completed in their new format, which should be January.
Okay. Any other discussion? All right. Roll call, please.
Mrs. Howard?
Yes.
Mr. Black?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Mr. Kenwood?
Yes.
Mr. Von Rath?
Yes.
Yes. Item three, the enrollment report.
And I am just, the enrollment report is there for you to look at.
Right.
I don't know if you want to make your monthly statement, but
my monthly calendar.
Sam, drum roll, please.
456 students in portable classrooms this month.
Well, we got to work on.
I guess I never asked. Looking at, we have a class of 7 third graders and 5 fourth graders at Churchill. It shows here.
It's a combined third, fourth bilingual classroom.
Okay. So it's one class.
It's one class.
12 students.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And there's students that just, that was our first year of moving to a bilingual program, and those students had English in an English-only class and then moved into a bilingual first grade, and that's just been a class that's been a little slower to exit.
Yeah. I guess, one other question with proposals from the think tank is how it affects class size. What is class size? Is it easier to balance things now?
Mm-hmm.
Is the ideal equal class size
mm-hmm.
across?
Mm-hmm. There's certainly that component as well.
Yeah.
The other thing I just want to mention very quickly, we've been reporting to the health department our attendance this last several days because we've seen an uptick in flu and strep, and so that the nurses have done a great job of noting that, highlighting it, and we've just been reporting it. We're not in a danger zone. We've had a couple schools that have gone up to 14% on a given day, but we're still hovering it around somewhere. Some are as low as 2%, some are up at 8-9%. And the law doesn't require us to report till 10%. But it's good data for us to have, and it's good data for the health department to have, because they can, it assists them in knowing what the condition of our communities are.
Do you get a waiver for ADA type calculations?
If you went high enough, yeah. I can't remember what they said when we were so worried about H1N1, terrorizing our schools.
But no, like when all the students would go to take your daughter to work day.
Right.
And you'd lose the enrollment.
That's right. When it was always at a bad, it was like a month we always liked to count.
So are the higher percentage schools in the same area? Or is it?
I think everyone's experiencing it a little bit. But now Hadley has had really nothing to speak of, although we've had some sick teachers. But the attendance there has not been unusual.
Get your flu shots.
Yeah.
Anything else, Anne?
No.
All right. Board reports. Committee reports.
Board Sam? Reports. I have a few. The ISBA Delegate Assembly final report. I know you're all waiting for that. I have not prepared it. Hopefully we'll have it on the agenda maybe in the next meeting or two, and we can finalize that.
Do you want it as an agenda item, or do you want to just do it as a board report?
I prefer it as an agenda item so I can just put the report in the board book stuff.
Okay.
So people can just look at it.
Oh, sure. How about if I put it under other? Would that work?
Perfect.
Okay.
I attended the Forest Glen PTA meeting Tuesday, November 27th, and obviously the think tank worked on a discussion while I was in attendance there. Policy committee met Friday, November 30th. We reviewed the committee recommendations as well as ISBA press recommendations for Section 3, the General School Administration section, and several other individual policies. Eric and I are going to meet December 17th for further discussion on a couple individual policies, and I know Ann and Maureen are going to look into a couple other separate policies as well. With the final look to present for the first reading this group of policies in some a meeting in January.
Probably the last meeting of January.
Okay. And finally, I attended the Winter Orchestra concert. My middle daughter Ava was a proud member of the beginner orchestra, and she and her orchestra members put on a great show, of course. And so I wanted to personally thank Georgia Lemus, Jennifer Vasquez for all their hard work. I know they do a great job there, and I know my daughter, who is very resistant to do anything, has actually picked the violin of all instruments, and she really loves it and really have a great time. So,
do you still wear earplugs, Sam?
I did not have to. I was worried, but the Hadley Orchestra is very good.
Oh yeah,
excellent. You would be surprised, or maybe
excellent.
Not surprised,
yeah,
but
they're excellent.
They did a great job. So kudos.
And a quick piggyback on that, although it's not a board report, tomorrow night, Tuesday, is the Hadley Band Concert. So
Tuesday and Thursday.
Yeah, because they're splitting it up.
Right.
Yeah. You hear them rehearsing tonight.
Yes,
we did.
And
thank
I got
you.
A... Oh.
Go ahead, Drew. Dan?
I attended the Franklin PTA meeting. I think it was that same night, Tuesday, November 27th. Karen Carlson gave a standards-based report card presentation. Lots of good discussion on that. And then following that, there was a lot of questions, comments on the think tank. So we had some good conversation on that. So it was good. And then on my way out of Franklin, per a board member's request,
thank
I stopped
you.
By
thank
the...
Thank you, Dan. I appreciate it.
But they waved me off, so... I took two steps in, I got a wave off and left.
Well, I had spoken to Laura ahead of time because I couldn't be there, and I knew Dan would pop in for me, and she had said that she would. A lot of information gathering, and so she did forward her the think tank questions that were coming from her parent group to us.
Okay, good.
So, which we did receive, and I know Karen and will be addressing those questions.
Mm-hmm. That's it.
PTA Council on November 26th, which is in the morning. I attended that, and again, we're kind of saying the same thing. Lots of conversation around the think tank, which actually makes me feel good because, you know, we're continuing to hit a lot of different groups who can attend a PTA meeting but maybe not another evening meeting. And so, you know, PTA Council, as people may or may not know, is a leadership council. It's all the PTA presidents, their delegates, and then also committee chairs. So good conversation. Julie was there to answer lots of questions, and we collected lists at that point as well. And the only other thing I'll make a quick shout-out for is this, to thank all of the District 41 community and the Glen Allen community at large for the generosity from our holiday sharing program, which was delivered on Saturday, this past Saturday, the 8th. So thank you to CSO for supporting it, to all of our parents and community members for supporting that. We delivered holiday gifts with the support of Glen Allen Juniors, CCW at St. Petronell, Glendale Heights Community Outreach, and Village Green Baptist Church, and then, of course, District 41, to 221 families. So thank you, thank you. Do you finance? I haven't heard about that, but...
Yeah, we pretty much we covered the... there were two items on finance. We've kind of discussed both of them. One of them is the fund balance question, and the other is presentation for foreign language. It'll go to the next. It'll go to the next board meeting for full discussion.
Okay, great. Anything else? All right. Upcoming meetings: January 14th, Happy New Year, 2013, regular board meeting, 7:30 at Churchill School, at Churchill. On the 14th of January, and then January 17th, the board has a special meeting at 5:30 at the Central Services Office, and that is our search.
What's the difference with a special meeting?
Is it special.
No.
I just didn't know.
Not a regular. Just an additional meeting.
Just an additional meeting, yeah.
Anything that comes outside of our regular business meeting, we term them as special meetings. And
I'm having a brain cramp, so I'm looking it up.
If it's a closed meeting, if it's for closed session, it is notified, and there's very specific reasons that we can go into closed session.
There's usually no action.
Right.
The 14th is at church.
Correct, yeah. Okay. Any other matters to be considered by the board at this time? All right, anyone present who'd like to address the board at this time, or public participation? All right, thank you very much. The board has determined it has a need to adjourn to closed session to discuss the following matters. A, collective negotiating matters between the district and its employees or their representatives, or deliberations concerning salary schedules for one or more classes of employees. Item B, the purchase, lease of real property for use of the district, including meetings held for the purpose of discussing whether a particular parcel should be acquired. Item C, the appointment, employment, compensation, discipline, performance, or dismissal of specific employees of the district, or legal counsel for the district, including hearing testimony on a complaint lodged against an employee or against legal counsel for the district to determine its validity. May I have a motion to adjourn to closed session?
Motion.
Second.
Roll call, please.
Mr. Black?
Yes.
Mr.
Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Mr. Kenwood?
Yes.
Mr.
Bondrack? Yes.
Howard?
Yes. Yes, the board will be taking action when it returns from... May be taking action when it returns from closed session. Thank you. Thank you, everybody, for coming, for staying. We appreciate it and look forward to more conversation. Thank you for being here. Thanks. Thank you.